Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Michael Kist, Benjamin Solak. It's the Kist and Solak Show, presented by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation.
You are flying high on the Kist and Sikkema Show. This is episode 9, powered by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. If the intros are a little different, that's because I have a special guest talking with us today to get us prepped for week 2 action, Eagles Bucks. Trevor Sikkema is here with us today. Follow him on Twitter at Tampa Bay Trey. Follow his work for Pewter Report. Also, he does great stuff on Locked On NFL Draft. Trevor, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. It's good to be with you, Michael.
Yes. And Trevor, before we begin, I just want to congratulate you on your success, man, because being in the Tampa Bay area and having followed you for a while now and having the extreme pleasure of sharing some drinks with you at the Senior Bowl, look, I turn on sports radio on my morning drive, and there you are. The Jameis Winston story broke, and there you are on local news. I look on the Twitter timeline, and you got some stupid, hilarious viral tweet all over my timeline. I go to get my NFL draft fix, and there you are killing it with our buddy John Ledyard on Locked On NFL Draft. So congrats on all your current and future success. It's awesome to see. What's it like being a rising Big J star covering football for a living?
Big J journalism, that's what it is. No, it's been fun, man. It's been a crazy ride. Over the last year, I'm kind of from this Tampa area. And so it was a really good start to my career, being able to settle and cover a team that I've known a lot about. And that has kind of taken me into a lot of different avenues, which, you know, whether it's writing or TV or radio. And I've met so many great people, so many people who are so good at their work, yourself included. And I do think it is very funny how you and I live about 45 minutes from each other.
Yeah.
And we've never hung out. Like here, I've only seen you in Mobile, Alabama, and it was great the one time that we did. But obviously, you and I kind of doing our thing on both ends of the spectrum. So it's a blast, man. It's a lot of fun. But you know that now. You're full time in it. You know how fun it can be, how much of a grind it can be. But it's definitely an enjoyable thing, definitely because of the people that you get to meet and the cool opportunities you get to have, like being on this podcast, of course.
For sure, for sure. And hopefully we get to meet up sometime either right before the Bucks game or after the Bucks game or something, because I'm going to be there and it's going to be awesome. Look, let's not dance around the bush here. The Bucks in a win that everybody saw coming, the entire NFL sports.
Absolutely. Yeah, of course.
48-40.
Yes.
They put up an offensive juggernaut against the New Orleans Saints and come away with the week one win. Ryan Fitzpatrick's best day ever, 417 yards, 4 touchdowns. But I did see that they brought in Brogan Roback in for a visit, the Hard Knock star. Is Fitzpatrick's job in jeopardy already?
Ooh, you know, it's dicey. You know, after that kind of a game, they were really hoping for 50 points and they just came up short. So that's why, you know, you got to bring Brogan in for the insurance. You know, you just never know.
Look, Ryan Fitzpatrick is on pace for 6,600 yards and 64 touchdowns. Is that sustainable?
You know what? I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say yes. No, it was, man, that whole first week was crazy. Tampa Bay has never been known for offense. Like at any point in the franchise's 40 years here, have they been known for offense? I mean, all the success that they've had, obviously with the Tony Dungy, even when John Gruden was there, it was all built through the defense. They've never had a true franchise quarterback. I know some people are going to yell at me just because they would think that it's Jameis Winston, but obviously that's a little shaky. But offense has just never been in this team's DNA. And to go out week one on the road against the Saints and know that you've got to put up a hefty amount of points to keep up with this team with your backup quarterback. I mean, I was telling you, man, I was just laughing in the press box at some of this stuff. Some of the throws that he was making, the calls that they did, it was never would have seen that coming. I really didn't. I really did not see that coming.
And part of the reason for the offensive success, at least right now, what we can attribute it to, is that head coach Cutter, who was calling the plays last year, has officially turned the play calling reins over to offensive coordinator Todd Monken. And how has that affect the way that the offense is constructed and deployed? And do you think that was a big difference for them in week one?
Yeah, so just to give a little backstory of it, Cutter was the offensive coordinator back when it was Lovie Smith's first year, or final year, sorry, as the Buccaneers head coach. And when they decided to get rid of Lovie Smith, that was in 2015, 2016, they promoted Dirk Cutter because they didn't want to lose the consistency that they had with Jameis Winston coming off of his rookie year. Winston did have quite a bit of stats. He showed some nice things, and they thought that consistency with him and with Dirk Cutter being the offensive mind that he is and the play caller, they thought that was going to be good moving forward. And so for the last 3 years now, 2 years as him as a head coach, Cutter has been calling plays. He's been the head coach, but he's also been the guy on the headset on the sideline with the play sheet calling the plays every game. Not to say that he comes up with the offensive game plan himself. It's totally a team effort between him and the staff, but he was the one kind of making the final decision on game day. Hmm. Now, 2016 and 2017 go by, and this team couldn't get it done. Couldn't score in the red zone. Couldn't put enough points up, couldn't be efficient in the right areas of offense to continue to sustain drives, put up enough points to win the game. Now, they were kind of in the middle of the pack when it came to, oh, look at the NFL averages. You know, we're kind of right there in the middle of the pack with a lot of teams. But they couldn't get it done. And I know the defense was a big problem too, but the offense, especially in the red zone, scoring points, where offensive play callers make their money is when space is more limited. And that often comes, you know, on situational third downs and in the red zone. And they couldn't really get it done with him as the play caller. So coming into this year, Todd Monken, who is the offense coordinator, once Cutter got the job, he was the offense coordinator at Oklahoma State back when Brandon Whedon and Justin Blackman were lighting up college football. They had the number one and number two offenses in the country for those 2 years that he was their offense coordinator. Then he goes to Southern Miss to be the head coach. They were, I think, ranked 113th in offense before he got there. And then I think that they were a top 10 offense his final year there before he took the job with the Buccaneers. So this guy obviously knows what he's doing with offense. Going into the year, Dirk Cutter, he coached the wide receivers for the Buccaneers as well. And going into this year, Dirk Cutter said, okay, now you're just going to be offense coordinator. I'm not going to have you worry about a position group. You're not going to be the wide receivers coach too. You're just going to be the offense coordinator. You're going to help me with the game planning. We're going to score some points this year. So going into the preseason, Dirk Cutter actually says, hey, you know what? I'm going to give Monken the reins for play calling during the preseason. And before the first preseason game, we said, is this going to continue in the regular season? And Dirk Cutter said, no. He said, no, I'm going to take play calling back when the regular season comes around. This is kind of just a reward for Todd. You know, all the hard work he's done, he deserves to prove himself as a play caller.
Well,
he ends up killing it in the preseason. That first team looked really good in the preseason. And here we go, week one. They never answered our question when we asked who was calling plays. We end up finding out actually during the broadcast at the beginning of the Saints game who was actually calling the plays. And boy, it was a masterpiece of a game plan. It really was. The way that Todd Monken attacked certain types of coverages. And if the Saints ran the same kind of coverage three times in a row.
Yeah.
The fourth play, Dirk Cutter would basically, Todd Monken would basically dial up a play that ended in a touchdown. Mm. And that happened three separate times in that game. And so you could just tell that with Monken being up in the booth as opposed to being on the sideline, he can see everything. He almost gets that all 22 angle, obviously, if you will. He can see the coverages. He can see the defense as a whole. And, you know, I know it's only 1 week. Don't want to totally overreact, but he looked like he was in total control that game. And obviously, they outdueled a future Hall of Famer in Drew Brees and Sean Payton on the scoreboard because of it.
And I'm glad you brought up the scheming aspect of the dialing of the big plays based on the coverages that we were seeing. And this kind of ties into my next question. DeSean Jackson had a big day. they did a great job scheming him open, especially on his 58-yard touchdown. That deep dig on the outside held the middle of the field safety, allowed Jackson, working from the slot, to scream across that deep middle zone of Marcus Williams. On the day, 5 targets, 5 receptions, 146 yards, 2 touchdowns, tremendous day. And look, I can empathize considering our current wide receiver situation with the injuries here in Philadelphia, but Jackson suffered a concussion, may not be available for week 1. Any updates on his status? How does that affect the offense?
Now, so, you know, we'll go into, you know, we're recording this podcast on a Wednesday, and so they'll go into today, really get the first word of how he might be going into this weekend, because as you probably know, and a lot of people know, once you go into concussion protocol, it's not up to the team anymore. You know, right. It's all up to the NFL. It's the NFL. They're the ones who monitor that. And boy, do you want to do the whole like gun to your head thing? Do you think he plays? I ultimately think that he doesn't play, which is a real bummer, especially for Jackson going up against Philadelphia. But the reason why I say I don't think he plays is because he took that. That was a hard hit, straight head to the turf, full speed when he got that concussion. He was on the ground for a long time. I'm sure, you know, Jackson, especially, you know, knowing who he is and the matchup, the team that he's getting to go up against this week, he's going to work as hard as he can to try and play in this game. I would say that it's going to be a stretch for him to play in this game, but obviously, the Buccaneers used him very well against New Orleans. They used him in a lot of different ways, really the perfect ways, to be a mismatch player. And that guy that, boy, I've been pounding the table for them to put him more in the slot.
Yeah.
Use him more as a complimentary piece. Use his speed, not just deep down the field, but as a distraction, as a, you know, as a decoy, also getting the ball in his hands right away, letting him do yards after the catch, all that kinds of stuff. And so it did seem like they were using him a little bit better in that way in New Orleans, which is why it's kind of, it might be a bummer if he can't go this week.
I've thought for a while that that slot role should be where he should be in Tampa Bay.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And I was 100% with you. And you saw, I mean, it paid dividends. You definitely got a return investment on that move. Speaking of wide receivers, our son, my wide receiver 2 in the 2017 NFL draft, Chris Godwin,
yes.
had an amazing diving catch, had a red zone touchdown. He's so slept on, Trevor. Could you please tell the gentle listeners about the hive that is Chris Godwin Hive?
Dude, he's unreal. It seems like every practice I watch, every game that I've watched, at least as of late, you know, really almost the second half of his rookie year on, I've been asking myself, how the heck did this guy last till the third round? Yeah. How? It's just so odd. And Chris Godwin was funny because Chris Godwin was a guy where you liked the tape already. And then he ran in the 4.4s, which people didn't expect. And it's almost like people thought to themselves, there's no way that's right. And they didn't like up his stock because of it, because Tampa got a gem in Chris Godwin. He is. And I said this going into the year, you know, I was on some fantasy podcasts going into the year. I'm like, look, Chris Godwin's more valuable than DeSean Jackson. And it's kind of funny that I say that because Jackson obviously had an incredible first big day. But you could also see flashes from Godwin of why I said that going into the year. This guy is a bigger body. He can block in the run game. He can handle all kinds of different defenders. He's got the size. He's got the speed. But the most important part, he has the consistency. Like if you throw this ball to him, I would almost trust Chris Godwin to come up with a catch more than any other receiver on this team, including Mike Evans. I mean, when Mike is in the zone, like when Mike is almost like in revenge Mike Evans mode, he's incredible, and I'd trust him. But some of those, I mean, Godwin's touchdown catch against the Saints. I don't know if you caught that one or if you've gone back and but like for him to turn and catch that back shoulder ball as it was going out of bounds, and then for him to somehow get 2 feet in bounds, you just see what kind of a natural that guy is to play wide receiver. And boy, the Bucs are glad that they have him. He would be a wide receiver 1 on many other NFL teams, no question.
You look at him in his college career, like you said, I don't understand how the hype wasn't bigger. He balled out on big competition too. He had a touchdown on Adoree Jackson. He beat Gerrion Conley. He's so fantastic at the catch point, at not necessarily separating throughout the route stem, but creating space at the catch point. And paired with his body control, it's fantastic. So another wide receiver that I want to talk about real quick is Marshawn Lattimore's dad, Mike Evans. How do you cover him?
Yeah, it's, you know, it was funny going into that game because obviously a year ago when the team was in New Orleans, that was the game that you know, Jameis did the whole pokes Marshawn Lattimore thing when he was on the sideline. And then Mike Evans comes out of nowhere and just like WWE blindsides Marshawn Lattimore. And that was, I mean, that was a culmination of a lot of things. There was a lot of frustration in that game. That was really the first game all season where Mike Evans had truly been locked down. Yeah. I mean, he went up against Xavier Rhodes earlier in the season, but he didn't get the stats. There were plenty of times where Mike Evans had Rhodes beat. He just didn't get the ball. Against Lattimore was not the case. He could not get space on Marshawn Lattimore. And so we asked Mike Evans before the Saints game, obviously it's an actress to say, hey, you know, you're going up against Marshawn Lattimore again. Is there a little extra motivation here for you, you know, going up against a guy that really got the better of you last year? And of course, he gave the PR answer where it's like, no, you know, I give 100% against every guy I'm going up against. And I'm like, yeah, okay, buddy. And in the Saints game, the first catch that Evans made, I think it was just a simple in route, like a 5-yard in route. And Lattimore was on him. And he got up, stared at Lattimore, spun the ball right in front of him for like a 5-yard catch. And I'm like, oh, okay, it's on. So Lattimore had a tough time. And that's why I'm saying, you know, when Evans plays with that edge to him, it's very, very difficult for any cornerback in the NFL to be able to handle him. Because Marshawn Lattimore, I truly think, is, if he's not already one of the best, then he's well on his way to being one of the best. And Mike Evans handled him all game long. So, yeah, Philly fans are just hoping that they do not get a on-edge Mike Evans, is all I can say. Because when you do, he is absolutely one of the top 5 receivers in this league.
So one of the keys for the Eagles in limiting Mike Evans and some of those downfield throws for Evans is getting pressure. And I'm looking at this and I'm seeing that Ryan Fitzpatrick was pressured on only 6 of his 34 dropbacks. That's 18%. Now I'm looking at Matt Ryan against the Eagles and he was pressured 38% of the time. Can the Bucs line hold up against this Eagles buzzsaw?
It's going to be a tough test. I mean, the Eagles defensive line is real good and, you know, they are very aggressive in everything that they do. And so it's going to be, it will definitely, you know, obviously 2 weeks in, but it's probably going to end up being their toughest test of the entire year. Here they're getting in week 2. And now I will say this, going into that Saints game, the Bucs offensive line did not have a lot of time together. The starting 5 did not have a lot of time together because of the injuries that we saw, little injuries that kind of held guys out throughout training camp. And I was like, man, you got Ryan Jensen coming in for the first time at center. Caleb Benenox starting for the first time at right guard. You know, DeMar Dotson wasn't there for most of training camp because he was recovering from surgery he had over the offseason. It just wasn't a lot of time. And I was worried about the chemistry that the guys had. But, man, they handled the Saints. They handled them really well. They looked like bulldogs in there. They were roughing the Saints' defensive lineup. They were creating great holes in the run game as much as forming a pocket in the pass game. And so I certainly don't think that the pressure percentage is going to be that low again, especially with the Eagles defense coming to town. And I know how aggressive that they can certainly be. But I will say that, you know, if you asked me this 2 weeks ago, I would have said, yikes. Yeah. Defensive line for the Eagles, definite advantage. But now I'm like, I don't know, man, I'm just interested to see. I think it's going to be a dogfight.
Yeah. We talk about time to throw with the Eagles a lot and limiting that pressure percentage. And Fitzpatrick got it out an average of 2.3 seconds time to throw, which is super lightning fast. So that's one way you can definitely keep him upright. If they can keep that up, they have a chance to keep him upright. And he's got wheels too. He can move around.
Yeah. Didn't think that, but when he scored on that RPO on the goal line, I was like, okay, I've seen everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Cameron, dude, I just got to say real quick, Cameron Jordan, obviously very good defensive end, Pro Bowl defensive. He was the key man on that play.
Yeah.
And holy crap, did he in no way, shape, or form think that there was any world in which Fitzpatrick was going to keep that ball? He crashed on Peyton Barber harder than I've seen any defensive lineman crash on an RPO setup. I was dying. That was so funny.
It was amazing. Okay, so before we flip it over to the defensive side of the ball, the running game for the Bucs, what is going on with that situation? Because you drafted Ronald Jones from USC. He got no time. He was inactive against the Saints.
Yep.
And you're looking at a combination of Peyton Barber, who had 69 yards. After that, Ryan Fitzpatrick with 36 yards. What's the situation there in Tampa Bay?
Yeah, it is going to be the Peyton Barber show. And a lot of people might think that necessarily like spells gloom and doom. But here's the thing, man. You know, Dirk Cutter's passing offense, vertical passing offense, all you really need is the run game to be solid enough to alleviate the things that you want to open up in the pass. So sure, you can all sit here and say, yeah, I'd love to gain 150 yards on the ground and control the clock the whole time, because it's the least risky thing about playing offense. You just hand the ball off, and if it works, it works. But that's just not how the Bucs operate. And so to think that they would do that is, you're fooling yourself. And so Peyton Barber is a guy who, he's a very big dude. You know, 6 foot, 230, moves north to south very well. And that's what they like a lot about him. They'll hand him the ball and he's just going to go up and he's going to get you as many yards as he can. Ronald Jones, not the same way, not the same kind of running back. And as of right now, Ronald Jones' skill set to them is a luxury. And going through this stretch of their season, very tough stretch here, especially without Winston, they're not really in position to play luxury talent. They have to play exactly what's going to be best for their offense to get them down the field and to get some points. And so with that said, it's without a doubt Peyton Barber. Peyton Barber is the workhorse dude. Jacquizz Rodgers is going to be the third down back for pass catching and pass blocking. And then everyone now and then, they're probably going to throw in Sean Wilson, who is their rookie undrafted guy out of Duke. He handles a lot of their kick return duties, and that's why he is on the roster before Ronald Jones is. But I don't even know, you know, especially with how hurt their cornerback group is now.
Yeah.
I would still be surprised if Ronald Jones even played this week, looking at what they did last week. And so if you're an Eagles fan looking forward to, you know, previewing what the Buccaneers are going to be doing, you could take a look at how they ran the ball versus the Saints, and it's going to be a lot of the same. They're going to want to try to replicate what they did last week.
Absolutely. Okay, flipping it over to the defensive side of the ball, and we'll kind of take a look back at the game with the Saints as well as we dig into the details, and we'll touch on those cornerbacks that you talked about. Twice in the game, the Bucs scored 17 unanswered points, two different points in the game. And just glancing over the game and seeing some of the turnovers, the fumbles really helped the Bucs, especially the return for a touchdown by safety Justin Evans. It felt like every time the Saints were about to get back in this game, they shot themselves in the foot. And those were big. I mean, the Saints were driving up and down the field. Breeze was 37 for 45, and that seemed to be the difference. Or, Trevor, am I just like a live football poor that isn't seeing it in the proper light?
No, it definitely was. I think that they probably would have won the game without one of those fumbles, the one that they returned for a touchdown. They certainly needed, but
yeah,
you know, fumbles are a funny thing because as a defensive, you hear defensive people say all the time, like, "Oh, we got to win the turnover battle. We got to create turnovers," all this kind of stuff. And interceptions, you can kind of plan and you can have skill for, but fumbles are
pure luck.
I don't want to say luck, but I mean, like, I definitely know what you're saying, but yeah, you cannot plan on them. You cannot plan on them happening. And so
they're not stable. They're not sustainable. And like, you know, we're going to,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good way. That's a good way to put it. Now, obviously you want your defensive guys always trying to punch the ball out, not saying that, but the fact that it did come out twice and it came out twice in crucial moments was definitely in the Bucs' favor there. And so I went into the game saying, that the only way the Bucs win this thing is if it's an ugly game and they win the turnover battle. Well, they won the turnover battle, but it was anything but an ugly game. So I think I can be half right, right? I can gloat that. But this defense, the entire year, I think, as you look at their roster and certainly the output that Mike Smith has had over the last 2 years and how he gave up 40 points in the first game, granted, I understand it's to a Hall of Fame quarterback, if they don't get turnovers, they're going to be in trouble. And so that's why I still have my reservations about how good and the ceiling of this Bucs defense could be, including this week against Philadelphia, knowing that they have played softer defense. They do give up quite a bit of yards. They allow their opponents to drive the field pretty easily. And without those turnovers, they would have made it a lot. They would have made that game that they should have won by a lot against the Saints a lot tighter than it had to be. And so I think, again, you know, you're probably looking for the Bucs got to win the turnover battle, even if the offenses are great. That's got to be something that they win every week. And I just don't, like you said, I don't know how sustainable that is.
And looking at that cornerback situation that we had alluded to before, they're going to have to get some picks off of Nick Foles. And look, the opportunities might be there. You never know with Foles. He's a little bit helter-skelter. But that situation in the cornerback room is getting thin. Brent Grimes missed last week with a groin injury. Vernon Hargraves was said to have a potentially season-ending shoulder injury. And we're recording on Wednesday morning, like we said, but he's going for a second opinion today. But wow, man. Both those injuries would press more action for Carlton Davis, who got his first start in week one, and then third-year man Ryan Smith, that would press him into action. They've also brought in cornerback Bashaud Breeland on a visit. How does that impact what the Bucs want to do defensively?
You know, it's a little bit interesting because, you know, you could have looked at this Bucks cornerback group even going into the year fully healthy and thought, that's the worst cornerback group in the NFL. And now they lose their top two guys. And so now, you know, not great. But I will say this. The Bucks have been in a little bit of an identity crisis on defense over the last 2 years. And I think the reason is because Brent Grimes has been their best corner. Brent Grimes plays at his best when you allow him to play off coverage, you allow him to read a quarterback, use his experience, his athleticism, his burst, his recovery speed to then make an impact on the ball and even cut some passes off, get some takeaways. That is when Brent Grimes is the best. He is very much an off coverage corner, especially because of his size. Every single other cornerback on the Bucks roster does better with press coverage.
Yeah.
So, you know, Mike Smith gets up there at the podium and says all the time, well, we got to play to our guys' strengths. Okay, well, you have an extremely divided defensive back room. And that's not even to say before they even drafted Justin Evans, they had quarters coverage type of safeties with press coverage corner. And it just like, it didn't make any sense. There was no definity in what they were doing on the back end. And so yeah. I do think that it obviously hurts when you lose guys as talented as Hargraves and Grimes are. But this might be the opening for them to, because Carlton Davis, their rookie, clearly plays better when press coverage. MJ Stewart, the other rookie from North Carolina, clearly plays better when he can get physical. Uh-huh. So it's probably going to be. And Ryan Smith is just not nearly experienced enough to play off coverage. He gets burnt all the time in off coverage. And so he's much better if you let him be a little bit physical, maybe jar a ball loose here and there. And so we might see them go more towards press than we've ever seen the Buccaneers do before, just because of the injuries. And you never want to say that your top guys getting hurt is good, but perhaps it might be a blessing in disguise for these younger guys because it might put them in a better scheme to do what they do best. It's certainly going to be a tough test going up against, you know, the reigning Super Bowl champions anyways, and you're a rookie in the NFL. But there is a little bit of a silver lining there, even though that those top two guys probably not going to play on Sunday.
Yeah, and I 100% understand what you're saying there as far as just the philosophy of the defense and what you want to be. Do you want to be a press man corner team or do you want to play off? So having that continuity there, obviously there's going to be some growing pains to go along with that. That's understandable. There's a lot of young guys in that secondary. So I hope they stay that progression off for one more week when they come and play the Eagles. But looking at how they can help their cornerbacks, this pass rush didn't seem to show up too much to me. I know they sacked Drew Brees one time, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I didn't see the pressure stats, but it didn't look like Drew Brees was under duress too much and he was able to deal from the pocket. Where is this pass rush coming from? Is it something to be concerned with, especially when you look across the offensive line of Lane Johnson, Jason Peters, Brandon Brooks, Jason Kelce are all top tier players with Pro Bowl caliber talent. You throw in Steve Wisniewski, who ain't bad either. Can they generate any kind of rush to help these cornerbacks?
Yeah, that's the big, you know, that was the big topic in the offseason, certainly is this was the lowest sack total team in the NFL last year. And it was abysmal. I can tell you from watching every single regular season game, it was abysmal. It didn't matter what the offensive line they were going up against, which quarterback it was, what the offensive scheme was, how long they held the ball. They could not get home just at all. And so in the offseason, they add guys that you are very familiar with, Bo Allen and Vinnie Curry. They also trade for another guy that you're probably very, very familiar with because you've seen him a lot, Jason Pierre-Paul. So they obviously do their due diligence. They got Vita Vea. I don't think Vita Vea plays this week. I really don't. So they have a revamped defensive line, and they have a lot of big firepower, if you will, that they added that should have made it better. But as Gerald McCoy would say himself, it takes time. It takes hard work. And these are two really tough tests right out of the gate. I mean, in the Saints game, you've got Drew Brees, who gets the ball out of his hand faster than like anybody I've ever seen. So that was just really tough for them to even get. Because, you know, people have been complaining about Pierre-Paul's first game, because he didn't really get much of a pressure. But I remember on three plays in particular where he just roasted his guy one-on-one, and it should have been a sack. But because Brees knew exactly where to go with the ball in the pre-snap, ball's out of his hand. You can't even get to him. I think that they're going to fare a little bit better against the Eagles, but again, their offensive line is real good. So this is another tough test for a different reason. You know, I ultimately think that I'd give the, if we're doing like a matchup, I'd give the check mark to the Eagles offensive line. At this point, I still think that they're going to hold up pretty well. But first game at home, the defense is going to be rocking, you know, with the crowd and all the energy and playing this the former Super Bowl champs. And Sure, you know, Bo and Vinny and them are going to be amped for it as well. And so it'll be interesting again. You know, I think the trench is going to be a really nice battle between these two teams, but I do think the Eagles certainly have the offensive line to kind of hold the Bucs at bay.
So I am looking up the line right now, and I'm going to put you on the spot. Right now, it's -3 for Philadelphia. The over-under is set at 44. Trevor, gun to your head, which way are you going? 85% of the betting action is on Tampa Bay right now, so that line is going to move.
I would take Tampa Bay in 3 points. I really would.
Oh, okay.
I would take Tampa Bay in 3 points.
Hard disagree.
Well, you know,
that's why we're here, though.
You know, I don't remember what the over under game was for the Saints game, but
I think it ended up over.
Well, of course, but I don't even remember what the number was.
Right.
The Bucks were the biggest dog in the NFL last week, and so. Yeah. The over under must have been, I don't know, like low 40s.
Yeah, and I mean with Breeze, maybe it was around 48, maybe, but I don't still know. Dude.
But what? One team basically 80. Outscored the over, so that's good. Yeah, I would take the maybe I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid, but I would take the Bucks in some points this week.
Yeah, like I said, 85% of the betting action is from what this site is telling me is going towards the Tampa Bay Bucks, so that point spread is definitely going to move. So you're not alone on this, Trevor. I don't think you're being a homer at all. You've got very well reasoned to believe in this team after coming away with a shocking win. And hopefully, what we're going to find out today, apparently, is the quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles. The starter is going to be named today. We still expect it to be Nick Foles, but you will see some hot betting action if it's actually Carson Wentz. And I might be running around the streets naked. Trevor.
I'll stay away from your neighborhood, man.
Yeah, please do. I mean, that's a good bet any day of the week. So, Trevor, thank you so much for joining us today. Would you let all the gentle listeners know where they can find all of your excellent work again?
Yes. PeterReport.com is where I do all my Bucks coverage at, but I do a lot of interaction on Twitter as well, at Tampa Bay Trey, T-R-E. Michael and I go back and forth all the time, so he knows the tomfoolery that is had on Twitter.com, and so it's always a blast on there, not just talking about the Bucks, but I talk about all kinds of college football and around the NFL and everything like that. So if you enjoy football, sports in any way, give me a follow. Never be afraid to interact with me. I love talking with all kinds of people about some sports. And so, I appreciate you having me on the podcast, man, really.
Absolutely, man. It was very, very fun on the first edition of the Kissed and Sycamore show.
That there you go. Nice. There you go. Getting it kicked off.
Yeah, your job is under extreme pressure here, so like you got to bring it next time. All right, we're getting out of here. Thanks for joining us. Remember, 5 stars on iTunes. Leave those reviews. We'll read them on air if they're funny and if they're, you know, especially complimentary towards me, and maybe if you rag on Ben a little bit. But as always, we all we got, we all we need. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Hey guys, this is John Stolness from the Good Fight and the Phillies podcast, Hittin' Season, where I talk to Phillies beat writers, broadcasters, and fellow Good Fight bloggers, as well as national baseball writers, and the occasional interview with Matt Klentak and Gabe Kapler. Also, you'll get Continued Success, a Phillies podcast hosted by Justin Clue and Liz Rocher, covering all things Phillies, and The Dirty Inning, a hilarious podcast hosted by Justin and Trevor Strunk, looking at the very worst innings in Phillies history. Make sure you are subscribed to the Good Fight podcast feed.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure, it's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.